What's up, guys? Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. As always, hosted on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Positive Chuck Mockler, here to do a quick recap of the game last night, the preseason game, the Clippers versus the Timberwolves. It was a fairly uneventful game, final score-wise. I'm going to kind of just talk about what we saw from the rookies, some of the established guys, some interesting lineup thoughts, and a few things that I'm actually kind of worried about. So that's coming up right now. So the game was not competitive. I believe yesterday my prediction was that it would be a four-point game or something like that. That was way off on my part. The game ended up finishing 128-101. It was never close throughout at all, which was kind of nice. It was nice to see resting Avery Bradley, Luka Mbamute, and Lou Williams. The second unit was still able to get a lot of stuff done. The team defense was fantastic. As a team, the Clippers started with the lineup of Patrick Beverley, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tobias Harris, Gallo, and Gortat, while the Wolves started with Jeff Teague, Derrick Rose, Karl-Anthony Towns, Wiggins, and Taj Gibson. Just some notes on Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't know what he's been doing in the offseason. He looks huge right now. He looks like an even bigger force than he did last year. His body looks a lot thicker. I think he's going to really be banging around a ton this year, which he definitely was trying to do last night against some of our players. It was really encouraging to see Shai put in with that starting lineup, given the rest to Avery Bradley and stuff like that. Patrick Beverley did play the one, but Shai did a lot of the kind of bringing the ball up and getting the team into half-court offenses, which was cool. We're going to go kind of quarter by quarter just to see. These are my observations. I was lucky enough to actually go to the game. Shout out to anyone else who was there, sat in some fantastic seats. I think there was about, 19 people at the game. That was a good time. It made for yelling at the Wolves players a lot easier. So right off the bat in the first quarter, Gallo came out absolutely sopping wet. I don't know what he's been doing, but he was trigger happy and everyone was totally fine with it. I don't think he missed a shot in the first quarter. I believe he put up something like 18 or 20 in the first quarter, which was, impressive. Every single shot, after the first couple shots, every time he let it fly, you assumed it was just going to go into the net, which was really cool to see. He also was a lot more active on defense than I'd seen him maybe ever. No disrespect to Gallo, but it seems like there's a new, maybe rejuvenated want to be a little more active on the defensive end. He had a really cool quasi-chase down block on Derrick Rose. The team defense itself was swarming. A lot of guys getting to the ball. It did seem maybe a little dangerous if we're going to play this style of defense against a team that can move the ball better than Minnesota. Minnesota seemed a little, apprehensive, or I guess timid is the right word, but they didn't seem too comfortable moving the ball against our defense, which, has to do with guys like Patrick Beverley out there and Shai with his gigantic reach getting in the passing lanes. But there was a lot of swarming. Gallo had two blocks, I think, which might not happen for the rest of the season, but it was cool to see. He seemed very fired up. He was kind of welcoming contact, but not in a way that would, freak us all out given his injury history. So that was really cool to see. Gallo has something inside him right now, and he's feeding it. So that's really awesome. It was really cool. Tobias Harris, he got into foul trouble kind of early. It was a very weirdly tightly called game in the beginning, which was kind of annoying, but he settled down and ended up having a great game, led the team in scoring again with 21. I'll get to those final stats in a bit. Tobias was tasked with guarding Karl-Anthony Towns a few times, and him and Gallo both kind of switched off every now and then. And when Tobias was on him, he was putting in effort, He was bodying him up. He was getting his hands on him. He was making it as difficult as possible for Kat to hit his shots. Now, the only downside to guarding a player like Kat is that you're guarding a player like Kat. He made a lot of shots, which is just kind of going to happen. You kind of got to ride that out and hope you can mess with his rhythm. Gallo on Karl-Anthony Towns wasn't as bad or as, terrifying as I really thought it was going to be, which was kind of nice to see. He just looks more locked in. I mean, maybe it's because, we've gone quite some time without seeing him play basketball, but his defense in this game compared to that first game against the Sydney Kings seemed a little more elevated. He was down to swarm. He was looking for blocks, but not in situations where it was going to cost us you know, a defensive possession or something like that. The first sub in was Mike Scott for Tobias Harris. He did not have the best game. I don't even think he hit one shot, maybe. I think he finished with 0 points. He didn't play very well. He got some open looks. Maybe it's a rhythm issue. We hope it's a rhythm issue, but who knows. In the first quarter, it was cool to see Shea kind of, you know, I think he started a little rattled. He looked a little unsettled running the point early, maybe being the guy who was calling out the shots. Some of his passes were a little jittery. You know, his vision is so close to being right there. I know you can't see my hands, but I'm doing a lot of hands motions to try and reiterate what I'm saying. But his vision, he has the right ideas. His timing is just maybe a half second off. He hit 2 threes in the first quarter, which was really cool to see. He did, however, get absolutely rejected by Andrew Wiggins when he was driving at one point. That's just going to happen. It was kind of a forced off the back foot runner he got rejected on. His defense looked really sound. He was never overwhelmed, really, or, you know, he was tasked with guarding Teague and Rose, switching off on those two guys, and it was cool to see him guard against someone like Derrick Rose, who's still uber athletic, despite his age. Happy birthday to Derrick Rose. He's 30 today, but Shea looked, he kind of got into a rhythm, you know. It was good to see him. He was not as, I guess, chill as he was in that preseason game against the Sydney Kings. That's kind of to be expected because this, I don't want to say mattered more, but it's a more real test for who they're going to play during the season and the level of play they're going to see during the season. So Mike Scott was that first sub for Tobias. The second subs in were Montrezl Harrell, Sendarius, and Jerome. Ty Wallace was out there too. I will say Trez in the pick and roll is a revelation. Watching him, he could do anything that he wanted in the pick and roll. I'll get into this a little bit later. He ran into the pick and roll with Gallo. He ran it with Ty Wallace. He ran it with Shea. Anyone listening, and me included, could run the pick and roll with Trez, and he will get a bucket. He's got such good hands for a big guy. He was getting some passes that maybe, you know, Gortat or someone like that wouldn't have been able to handle, possibly, but he handled them. He got his dunks. He was energetic. At one point late in the game, this was my favorite part of the game, and I probably will mention this again later on this podcast. At one point in the game, Gallinari are running the pick and roll. Gallo hits him with a behind-the-back pass because it was very tight in the passing lanes. Trez gets the ball, throws down a dunk, runs past the Timberwolves bench, and just gives him the classic finger guns on the smile as he's running. This team's intensity seems to only be ramping up as we get to the season, which I'm just so excited. It was fantastic to see. Jerome in the first, this was kind of a big concern. I'll get into this more a little bit later, but he looked uneasy. He looked like he was rushing some stuff. Maybe it was, you know, him taking this opportunity to really try and fill the stat sheet, show what he can do, but he just seemed a little rushed. It seemed like the game maybe was above him at that point. He had a couple turnovers. I don't think he hit a shot in the first quarter. It may have been a three-point shot if he did. He just, you know, he looked like a rookie, which isn't something, you know, thankfully we had two first-round picks. I think we maybe wouldn't have chosen Jerome if we only had one first-round pick. We'd have gone with Shea. But kind of uneasy after the first quarter. But hopefully in the third game, he will slow down, you know, just a little bit, pump the brakes a tiny bit. He was running at some high RPMs, if that makes sense to everyone listening. After the first, it was 40-38. So close game after the first. And then it quickly just got, oh man, so out of hand. Ty Wallace came in, and he was phenomenal. He did everything this game. He was playing with so much energy. Him and Trez working together, I cannot wait to see Ty Wallace and Trez during the year. They have a fantastic connection on the pick and roll. They know where to find each other. Every time Ty Wallace was bringing the ball up, he was looking and finding Trez. It was really cool to see. Jerome in the second half looked a little timid on defense. I wrote down in my notes, truly an uneasy feeling given his draft position, but I'm trying not to think about that. He's just got to get locked in a little more. This is going to take time. He does seem like a bit of a project player, maybe. His shooting form looked great. The shots just weren't falling. It's, you know, it is what it is. Early in the second is when Patrick Beverley started kind of jawing at other players. Him and Derrick Rose were going at it all night, and it was really cool to see. I don't No, energy-wise, if there's a better duo in the league than Trez and Beverly, I can't imagine trying to be on the court with both those guys at the same time, because you're going to get it from all angles. It was really great to see his intensity at a, at a postseason level in the preseason. I don't know where it's going to go from here. I'm assuming he read that GM survey and was livid with him being left off of it, so it was cool to see. Tobias really ramped up his defense in the second quarter, which was cool. He was just hustling. I don't think he got any steals, but he was pesky. He was a really annoying defender to go against, and it was great to see. At one point in the second, Wiggins went up for a dunk, and Shea absolutely blocked him. It was palm on ball. He absolutely got the block, but the refs, for whatever reason, decided to call a foul. Say what you will, but it was cool to see Shea not shying away from, you know, being a rim protector and really challenging a way bigger player at the rim. At halftime, it ended up being 69-53 in favor of the Clippers. 22 assists in the first half for the Clippers and 28 rebounds, 22 team assists, I should say. It was great to see. The ball movement was there. Anyone can get their shot. If you have an open shot, you take it for the Clippers. It was great to see. No one really seems to be the focus, because when you have guys like Tobias and Gallo, who were both just on fire, they both ended up shooting 70%. I think Gallo shot 71% for this game. When those guys are moving, it doesn't matter who gets the ball, it's going in. Shea looked comfortable in the first half. Jerome seemed a little bit overwhelmed, but we're going to get into the second half right after this. So in the third quarter, Gallo had another block on Rose, and it just really kind of, I think everyone in the arena kind of snapped up of like, what is happening right now? Is this what we're going to see this year? Are we going to see Gallo average a block a game? That would be mind-blowing. I think we would all welcome it. We hope he, you know, when he was guarding Karl-Anthony Towns, Karl-Anthony Towns was putting his body on him a lot. We hope Doc had mentioned that Gallo was maybe going to play the five sometimes. I hope that's a very limited and honestly not used rotation. Gallo cannot take that abuse down there. His body's not built for it. He might want to take it, but his body is not going to be able to hold up to that kind of physical toll that's going to happen with these Western Conference centers. Gallo and Trez were running the pick and roll together, which is a nightmare for the defense. Gallo, on a couple instances, you know, he'd drive, he'd dish, he'd step back, he'd hit a shot. Trez was always just head down, straight into the paint. There were times when there were five hands touching Trez's body at once, trying to rip him away from the rim, and he still got the job done. It was really cool to see. One of the lineups in the third quarter that I loved, absolutely loved to watch play, was Patrick Beverly, Shea, Tobias Gallo, and then Trez at the five. So the same as the starters, except you got Trez at the five for just a little more movement and motion in the offense. They played really well together. There was a lot of good understanding of where each was going to be on the floor. Tobias scored at the rim. He scored mid-range. He was hitting threes. It was great to watch. This was the lineup that really made me realize that Shea's vision is so close to getting figured out and really understanding his timing. His mid-range game was so fluid. There's a video of him working with pull-up shots with Sam Cassell this week. That absolutely translated over to the game last night. He hit a couple of those and it looked great. Boban checked in the third. That was the biggest cheer of the night, of course. He ended up kind of dominating the Wolves, which was really cool to see. He hit 7 free throws out of 7 attempts, which at this point, there's no excuse for any NBA player to not shoot at least 85%. If Boban can go 7 for 7, you can go 8.5 for 10. Any NBA player who's listening to this, I'm sure there's thousands. Mike Scott, still scoreless in the third quarter. Not what you really want to see. I'm kind of hoping he maybe doesn't get as much second unit minutes. I don't really know who else would, now that I'm word vomiting this out of my mouth right now. But his shots, you know, it was good shot selection, which was very encouraging to see, but just no makes. Moving to the fourth quarter is when I wrote down the note that my prediction for a close score was wrong. A name that I haven't mentioned yet, this was kind of depressing to see. Juwan Evans, his first check-in was 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, which did not bode well. Ty Wallace was filling the stat sheet. He was kind of doing really whatever he wanted. He was hustling. So I think Ty Wall is playing so well. This is not good for Juwan. Juwan seems like he's maybe going to get cut. He ended with 4 fouls and no points, I believe. Definitely not going to get you any playing time on this roster. He was hustling, though, which this team seems to really enjoy. Jonathan Motley checked in with 7 minutes left in the fourth. Motley has a really nice mid-range game. His footwork was really good. He played, you know, maybe he was, it seemed like he was maybe feeling a little bit of what Jerome was feeling. He was kind of rushing some stuff. But overall, I think he had a rebound. He had a couple points. It was nice to see. Angel Delgado checked in with 4 minutes left in the fourth. He got a quick bucket, so that was good to see. He was hustling. Those two guys probably going to end up more in the G League. Delgado looked a little less overwhelmed by the moment than Motley did, so he might see some more first-team playing time. Who knows? We have a very shallow center position, so you know we're one or two injuries away from seeing a lot of Motley and Delgado this year, which would be fun, I guess. I didn't really take any notes the last 6 minutes because it was pretty sloppy basketball and the game was fully out of hand. I apologize for that. Final tally, Clippers 128, Wolves 101. Honestly, it could have been 140 to 101. It was really cool to watch. On 49 made field goals, the Clippers had 36 total team assists. This is such a great illustration of how egalitarian our lineup is. Anyone can get shots, and all these guys want other people to get shots. There's no selfishness. There, at no point was there a missed open man or anything like that. These guys look for each other. They want to find each other. They want to score. The only person who I guess I could see being quote-unquote selfish is going to be Lou Williams, but that's his role. His role is to go out there. He didn't play last game. His role is to go out there during the season and score. So he might be a bit of a ball stopper, but if his three-point shots are going in, honestly, who cares? Shea finished with 12 points, 5 assists. Gallo finished with 22, 6, and 4. Tobias, 23, 6, and 4. This is right where, if these two guys can average, you know, 20-plus, 5-plus, 3-plus, it's going to be a really good year for the Clippers. The ball kind of would stop with Gallinari, but I think that was just a product of him absolutely feeling it in that first, in those limited minutes he played. He was brutally effective. It was very cool to watch, and it just, I don't know, it was a nice reassuring flow of offense for us, because I think, you know, I was a little worried about it, but now, I mean, it looks great. When it clicks, it's really going to click. It was great to see. Coming up, I'm just going to highlight a few concerns I maybe had, and then a bit of news about this apparent Jimmy Butler deal. So the only real concern last night, well, I guess the biggest for me, was kind of watching Jerome not shrink, because he didn't disappear, but just try and do too much. If he's going to get playing time, last night was not a good way for him to make his case. You know, Doc doesn't like guys who play like Jerome played like that last night. He doesn't want young guys who look overwhelmed by the moment. Shea got this run because he looks comfortable, and he is comfortable in this first team offense. 12 points, 5 assists, great to see. Cannot wait to see him in the second unit during the season, hopefully. But biggest concern was Jerome. I hope in our next game that they just, I mean, honestly, let him play. I think let him play maybe 3 quarters just to see if he can get into a rhythm, if he can find something, if he can get hot, something to get his confidence going before the season starts. I'm trying not to freak out. It is only the second preseason game, so, you know, who's to say? Let me know your guys' thoughts on Jerome. I like him as a player. It was so out of left field. We kind of had no choice but to trust the front office with his pick. So let's hope it gets better. Let's hope he can kind of get his feet under him and not try and rush so much and push so much that he ends up actually being detrimental to the team. Some final notes. Jimmy Butler, of course, not in the building, but they could have used him. The Wolves' defense is horrendous. I don't know. If you just started watching the NBA today and you watched that game last night and someone poked your shoulder and said, hey, did you know that the head coach of the Wolves, Tom Thibodeau, used to be considered the greatest defensive mind in basketball? You would laugh at that person, because there was no evidence of a Tom Thibodeau defense at all for Minnesota. It was, I mean, just awful defense. The score could have been even more out of range, if I'm being totally honest. Like, Tobias got what he wanted. Gallo got what he wanted. Trez just ate up the Timberwolves. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. The Timberwolves seem in dire straits. Apparently, Tibbs really thinks Jimmy Butler's going to play, so that would help. But Wiggins, obviously bad on defense. Karl Anthony Towns couldn't stop Boban, which was really cool to see. I think Boban finished with 14. He had more points than Wiggins in less minutes. So, you know, Boban's better than Wiggins. You heard it here first. As far as the trade goes with Minnesota and Miami, just some NBA news. Miami wants to Minnesota's preference in a Miami deal have included Bam Adebayo, Josh Richardson, and a protected 2019 first-round pick. Who knows? If any Butler deal happens, Minnesota wants to unload Gorgui Dieng, which could happen, but I don't know. The Heat have seemingly been the only really aggressive team doing this, so maybe by the end of the week we'll see a trade. I have no idea. Oh, man, that about wraps it up for me. Fantastic win from the Clippers last night. So many encouraging things. Only one real, blight on the situation, and that was Jerome's performance. But we can expect that to get better. It is nice that there's not so much pressure on him to start right away as there might be with Shea. But Shea's ready for it. I'm ready for Shea. I can't wait to see him in the regular season. Also, if anyone has any idea, the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander jersey is absolutely beautiful. His long last name kind of is like almost perfect symmetry over his number. If anyone can point me in the direction of where to find a version like that, I would very much appreciate it. The regular fan version just has shrunken text as opposed to the full U, which I personally find offensive. Anyway, that's my plea for a Shea Gilgeous-Alexander jersey location. I hope you guys have a great rest of your Thursday. I have been Positive Chuck Mockler. This is Locked On Clippers, of course, on the Locked On Podcast Network.